Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 58. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films. Ben Flanagan of Aspect Radio.
Ben, how are you today?
Ben, I'm good. Or should I say Stark, Ben Stark?
Yeah, I was thinking of starting it with, like, "Hello, Mr. Flanagan," or something like that. I didn't commit. We're talking about James Bond. I don't think we have anything super specific to talk about. I think just in general. We've got Spectre coming up this week. Hopefully I'll get to see it this weekend. It's always fun to talk about James Bond. I think you and I are both pretty big fans.
Yeah, for sure. I've loved James Bond my entire movie-going life, which is most of my life. And there have always been James Bond movies there for me. You know, I was born in the mid-80s, and this obviously originated on screen in the early 60s. And so I had a lot to pull from in my young childhood. And I remember for Christmas one year, maybe my brother Graham and I got one of the VHS box sets of the, like, remastered versions of the movies, and it was all of the Connery movies, you know, sans the fake James Bond movie. Then
right.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service and Live and Let Die were also a part of that 8-movie set. So, I mean, we just really poured into that, and it was just a wonderful introduction and, you know, just a great place to revisit, you know, when I was sort of coming of age as a moviegoer and as a James Bond fan. So it was fantastic.
Yeah. So as a kid, do you remember the first James Bond movie you saw?
I want to say that it may have been Live and Let Die, actually, because I think I grew up one of those weird kids who first thought of James Bond as Roger Moore before I knew that Sean Connery was, like, in the eyes of everybody else, the quintessential James Bond. And so I was kind of stubborn early on, thinking, no, Roger Moore's better. He is James Bond, not this Sean Connery guy. Who's this? You know, so I want to say if it wasn't Live and Let Die, it was definitely a Roger Moore movie, because he was my preference for James Bond for a while, and I still love Roger Moore, but I made the change like everybody else did at one point.
Yeah, except for everybody's mom. I always say that Roger Moore is everybody's mom's favorite.
Hey, he's a handsome chap.
Yeah, you know, and he's, like, so nice. You know, he's like, that's one thing I've been, I rewatched Live and Let Die the other day. I've got it on Blu-ray. And, I mean, it was his first movie. You know, this was his chance to be, you know, set the tone for himself and for the franchise going forward. And there are several shirtless scenes in Live and Let Die, and it almost cracks me up how unimpressive of a physical specimen. Roger Moore.
Yeah, I was watching The Man with the Golden Gun this week, and it's like Dad Bod City. Like with Roger Moore and Christopher Lee, that was just, you know, that's what the ladies liked back then, apparently.
Yeah, like the definition in his arm is the same as the definition of, like, the back of his neck, basically. It's just all just a uniform skin. I was in my house. It was kind of I grew up watching James Bond movies. And it was the height of Timothy Dalton, which was, you know, that short period there where Timothy Dalton was James Bond. And I think my first Bond movie may have been License to Kill. And so in my house, there was an ongoing debate over who was better. My dad was on the Timothy Dalton train. And my mom, of course, was a fan of Roger Moore movies. I feel like those are pretty good kind of, you know, polar opposites there. But for me, I do feel like, I don't know, Timothy Dalton kind of holds up. But a lot of that probably has to do with the fact that he was Bond when I was introduced to the movies. And also, like you, it was like when Sean Connery, when I started when I found out Sean Connery had played James Bond, it seemed like, it's like, what? Weird. Because I knew him mostly from Indiana Jones and Last Crusade.
And Medicine Man.
Yes, and Medicine Man, of course, and the Russia House, early 90s Connery. And so, yeah, it was a weird thing, and I think my first Connery may have been James Bond adjace, Never Say Never Again. So I think everybody's all mixed up when it comes to being introduced to James Bond, and the movies are mixed up. You know, there's zero continuity. There's repeated jokes. It just seems like the most lackadaisically put together movie series in history. Now that, you know, movie series are put together with such precision and such obsessive detail.
Right, and focus on the bottom line.
Right, yeah, and exactly. And
synergy, yeah. It's kind of
right.
annoying.
Right.
James Bond is like you said, it's just such, it's so loosey-goosey in terms of continuity, even though it kind of conveniently sort of references continuity. Like, I was watching The Spy Who Loved Me this week, too, and there's a reference to, let's say, Diana Rigg from On Her Majesty's Secret Service in that movie. It's very brief, but they reference it, and that's it, and then they just move on, and it's very rare that you get that in James Bond movies, but there are little things here and there. Even during opening credit sequences, there'll be footage from past movies starring another James Bond, but this happens to be a movie where, it, you know, Sean Connery ain't a part of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's really strange.
Yeah. Yeah. Another big part of my childhood was the search for the new James Bond. I mean, I think I spent many of my formative years as a Bond fan without a Bond movie to watch. Like I said, my first movie was License to Kill, and then I kind of got interested and watched them whenever I could. We didn't have any on tape or anything like that, but it was, I would try to keep up with any James Bond news I could find or watch any movies that I could find. I remember distinctly when Pierce Brosnan was cast as James Bond. I didn't know who he was, and I was like, Charles Bronson? Which would have been great.
Bronson
may have been
and Bond?
Passed away. Huh? Yeah, you know, why not? It was almost Burt Reynolds before Roger Moore, yeah. And then, of course, GoldenEye was a big deal. And then, of course, after that, the video game was a big deal. So I feel like Bond is one of the most consistent movie presences in my life. You know, like, even if I wasn't as tuned into movies, I was kind of tuned into what was going on with James Bond. And it's such an entertaining series to follow because it changes so often, and it changes in such weird ways. And it seems like there's always this Wild West period between Bond actors where you get these crazy ideas, like Quentin Tarantino's Casino Royale, you know, with Pierce Brosnan was a big rumor there after Die Another Day. So it's just, I think you might agree with me here. Being a James Bond movie fan, it's almost as fun to talk about these things as it is to watch the movies. Because, I mean, you see it now. There's like one throwaway comment by Daniel Craig about does he want to continue the series? Maybe not. And the discussion everybody loves to have every time one of these comes out is, well, who's going to be the next guy? You know, like, who's going to be the next guy?
Yeah.
And it's fast. It's just a fun discussion, and it's a fun thing to like think about, like who should be James Bond or who should have been James Bond. And then, you know, when
he's not suave enough.
Yeah, exactly. He's not even British.
His hair is not black.
Yeah, his hair is the wrong color. Which is that the older I get, the less that makes sense because Roger Moore's hair was basically blonde. I guess I don't know, man, like, what's your what's your favorite right now? I bet this is something that changes a lot, but what's your favorite movie right now? And then maybe we can talk about the actors.
Well, since I'm so fresh off of watching it, I mean, I literally watched this yesterday. The Spy Who Loved Me is a phenomenal James Bond movie. And it has so many elements that we know we often see in James Bond movies when we're describing certain movies individually. So you have, like, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, which is like the snow James Bond movie, right? The ski chase James Bond movie. You've got Thunderball, the underwater adventure James Bond movie. There are others that incorporate different settings across the globe. Spy Who Loved Me has everything. It has the underwater thing. It has the desert
set, yeah,
action. It has car chases with helicopters. It has the opening sequence is a ski chase in the snow where he ends up flying off of the mountain and base jumping basically and parachuting with a British flag parachute. It's just so, like, there's so much iconic James Bond imagery in it that it could serve as the quintessential James Bond movie. You know, even, like, I think the villain, I think for a lot of people, isn't what you call memorable from Spy Who Loved Me, but going back and watching it, this Stromberg character who wants to nuke the world so that he can create this underwater civilization and dystopia moving forward is just, that to me is just a wonderful, just, you know, awful villain idea that is realized beautifully by the actor whose name I can't remember, is Carl something, I think. I'm sorry to him, but it, to me, Roger Moore, I think, is the best movie as Bond, and he's great, in great form. It has one of the all-time great Bond girls in it, too, in Barbara Bach, who is just, not only she's beautiful, and she obviously fits that criteria when it comes to quote-unquote Bond girl, but, you know, that's a label I don't love necessarily, because, you know, for the most part, Bond girls are props, right, in these movies, but there are rare occasions where these actresses, these women, are given things to do, and they have actual characters to embody, and I think she does that nicely in this, and she plays off of Roger Moore really well. And what I also love about The Spy Who Loved Me, aside from the action, which is really deftly shot, is Bond, you know, down the stretch of this movie, has to be a part of a team, and that's not something that we're used to seeing necessarily in a lot of Bond movies. He kind of works alone, or if he's not alone, it's with the Bond girl or a woman or his love interest for that film. In this, he has to team up with, like, the American Navy, you know, and fight off this bad guy's army of people trying to realize this nuclear holocaust for him. And it's just really fun action, and the quips are all there. And, again, it's globetrotting. It jumps from one locale to the next. It's got a classic henchman and Jaws. It's got my favorite all-time Bond theme song, and I just think it's just a ton of fun, and if it's not my favorite, it's easy top five.
Yeah, it's really good. It may be great. I spent a lot of the weekend watching parts of the films and some of the films that I could get my hands on, and I just started rewatching The Spy Who Loved Me yesterday. And I'm a good bit through, and yeah, it keeps hitting me like, wow, that A, it's been a long time since I've seen that one, and B, this is like you said, it's like a best of highlight reel kind of.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean the Agent XXX is she's a really interesting Bond girl, and the way they set her up is fantastic, where
yes,
she's in bed with this Russian spy, and you're expecting the Russian whoever the Russian M to call in this Russian version of James Bond, and you see this guy in bed with this woman, and then when the call comes in, he just gets up and leaves, and she takes the call because she's a secret agent. And it looks like they cast as the Russian agent a guy that kind of looks like George Lazenby.
Yes, it looks exactly like him. I thought it was him.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that was, like, clever. But just in general, it's like, I feel like that's a huge step forward from, you know, the Honey Riders of James Bond, where it's literally, like, hey, you're standing near me, so why don't you join me on this adventure, and then maybe we'll get it on, too. It's really good, and I think a big part of that is Lewis Gilbert, who is one of, I think, my favorite Bond directors, in that he made three pretty similar movies, but they all go for Bond. You know, they go for it. And he did You Only Live Twice, which has the sequence at the end that takes place in the hollowed out volcano and has like the monorail, the Donald Pleasance Blofeld. It has all the trappings of big 60s James Bond. He directed that. He directed The Spy Who Loved Me, and he directed Moonraker, which is basically a remake of The Spy Who Loved Me, but in space instead of in the ocean. And I think Moonraker is kind of underrated right now.
It is. It's fun.
Yeah, it is a ton of fun. It has one of my earliest memories. I always thought it was The Spy Who Loved Me because it had Jaws in it, but then, of course, Jaws is in Moonraker, too, and it's the cable car sequence from Moonraker.
Yeah.
I remember sticking in my memory pretty vividly when I was a kid and really scaring me because I thought Jaws was a terrifying character. Of course, had I just continued to watch that movie, I would have eventually seen how nice of a guy he is.
I read somebody wrote that they didn't like Moonraker because Jaws ends up... They basically make Jaws into Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Right.
I'm not sure how fair of a descriptor that is, but I know that that's a criticism people have, that Jaws goes good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think at that point, Moonraker, there's so many other things that get so big about it that I'm kind of okay with it. Again, like, I'm fine with Bond going big when it does it stylishly, and I feel like Lewis Gilbert gets it. He really nails it, and he really takes advantage of the Ken Adams sets, and he goes super wide. Like, he doesn't...
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't patch stuff together. He just kind of, like, makes sure the camera moves from place to place where it needs to be, and then makes sure that the camera is nice and far back where you can kind of see everything happening. And enjoy it. I'm a fan of Lewis Gilbert, and I've become a fan of Moonraker. One thing that's great about Spy Who Loved Me is James Bond's Ronald McDonald snowsuit at the beginning.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Killer. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. That whole sequence is just fantastic. I'm with you on the Spy Who Loved Me. I think it may... For a while, I think For Your Eyes Only was my favorite Roger Moore movie, but it may be The Spy Who Loved Me just because it gets all those things right. So if it's not Roger Moore, who's your favorite Bond?
It's Connery. I mean, it's Connery.
Yeah?
It's got to be. Yeah, he is James Bond. And I mean, I don't know. I just reached a point where I really absorbed Goldfinger, you know, at a certain point where I'd probably seen it for like the fifth time, but was like kind of old enough to kind of get it. Goldfinger to me became the James Bond movie. And at that point, Sean Connery was just unmistakably James Bond. And I, like I said, I still love Roger Moore and Spy Who Loved Me. It might be my favorite James Bond movie, and he's Bond in it, right? And, you know, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, I know, is a favorite of yours and is certainly of mine, too. And it's, again, one of those that kind of has it all, right? And George Lazenby just kind of kills it in his only shot at it. And it kind of makes you wish, well, what if George Lazenby had a few more crap with James Bond? Would we think he's the best? You know, that's certainly one of the best movies. So, yeah, I don't know. I hate to, you know, fall in line here, but I just have trouble thinking of another actor when it comes to James Bond. I mean, Connery is just synonymous. I mean, he's so charming, and he, you know, he's obviously great with the quips, which is obviously Moore's big specialty with it. But the physicality, sort of like the masculinity that they obviously go for with Bond above all else. This is a trained killer and a man's man. Connery fits that bill, I think, more than anybody or as much as anybody. And they're all great. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I think pretty much every actor who's played James Bond has been a good James Bond. You know,
yeah.
And I think that's pretty fair to say. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who might scoff at Timothy Dalton, but I know that you have, you know, plenty of counter punches you can throw their way to dispute that. And I agree. I think Dalton was good. But
yeah,
for me, I just think Connery just embodied everything that the movie series specifically really went for with making this Ian Fleming character a reality on the big screen. And I think that's what I think he's certainly the blueprint for casting future Bonds. You want future Bonds to have elements, at least one major element of what Sean Connery gave to the character originally. And obviously he's the first Bond, and so for most people that, you know, he's always going to be Bond for that reason. But I think the movies he made are so entertaining, and just the qualities that he brought to the table to bring that character to life, to make Bond what we sort of think about just when we hear the name, that to me is the reason Connery is and will be the best Bond for now.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I went through the phase where I was like, well, to find the best Bond, you have to figure out who played the character from the book the best. And so I went and read some of the books, and I remember the one I remember at least finishing was Goldfinger. And in the midst of that, I realized, you know what, I don't really love this very much. Obviously the movies retain a misogyny and a nationalism and a kind of Eurocentric look on the world and on the history. And that's in the movies, and that's fine. But I feel like on paper, that is so unpalatable that I just couldn't get through it. And the 3-page-long descriptions of James Bond making scrambled eggs and martini recipes. Obviously the story's got their root in Playboy, but it definitely had that kind of old, musty, false sense of middle 20th century masculinity about it that I feel like the movies can take a little bit from, but then can also pepper in things that movies do well, like empathy and motion and action. And I feel like I see that on Connery, and I can't help but kind of bristle at that. And I feel like in Dr. No, he's fantastic, and he has, you know, one of the great all-time movie character introductions, and it's perfect. But then I feel like with every movie that he made, he became just a little bit detached from the role, and you can kind of tell, and he's just kind of sick of it. I feel like you can see that as early as Goldfinger, which again is a movie that I used to unabashedly love, but every time I watch it now, it there's something about it that it just doesn't sit right. Maybe it's too much of it takes place in America, or there's too much golf, or something, or maybe it's because I've read the book and I feel like it's almost too, it reminds me of that negative experience of reading the book. There's something about it that feels stodgier than something like From Russia with Love or You Only Live Twice, which are my two favorite Connery movies. So for me, I feel like Sean Connery isn't the best. But I can't tell you, I don't think I can tell you who's the best. I agree with you that there's never been a bad one, which is really encouraging, you know. There was a time when George Lazenby was my favorite because the potential was there. But you go back and watch that movie and, you know, there are moments where he doesn't quite sell it. I don't think he was as bored as Connery, but I don't think he was the actor that Connery was either. Daniel Craig, I think, has made a pretty strong case for himself. But I don't know, his movies, there's an incompleteness to his last two movies that I feel like hurt that a little bit. I think Quantum of Solace feels like half of a film, and Skyfall feels Skyfall is a really, really good movie, but I feel like it is it's almost an apology for James Bond movies more than it is a James Bond movie in itself. But I think he has great potential. There was definitely a time when there was no reason for me to believe that Pierce Brosnan wasn't the best, because he looks like he should be James Bond. And his movies kind of play like a smattering of everything. You know, he has his Connery moments, and he has definitely his Roger Moore moments. But he looks kind of the part better than both of them. But I feel like he doesn't really have his own identity, as James Bond. If I asked myself today, I think I go with Timothy Dalton, who is like, he's just like a cool dude, man. Like, he just seems like the coolest guy, and he seems dangerous. And I'll give you that he's not as built as Connery or Daniel Craig or Lazenby. But he just has this cool about him that you just get the idea that he's seen a lot, but he's not willing to let that rob him of his good times. Like he's got like the nice guy quality of Roger Moore, but he actually looks, his wrists are a different shape than his bicep. So I feel like, I don't know, like there's his opening sequence of Living Daylights, ends with him parachuting in on this girl that's on this boat, and obviously has a great interest in him. And he takes her phone from her and like reclines back on like the seat and like dials the phone and like just flippantly says, "Ah, Bond, James Bond," whenever she asks who he is. And I feel like that's great. Like he understands that if you're James Bond, there you are so confident that you don't have to pose. You know, you don't have to feel like Lazenby and Brosnan do a lot of posing. And I feel like Dalton would never pose, because he is so self-assured that he doesn't even have to sit up straight. He's that cool. And also I think Living Daylights is one of the most underrated Bond movies, and is definitely in my top three movies.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, James Bond movies. It's great. And it's sad that License to Kill is such a departure. And it's super sad that he didn't stick around. Either he didn't stick around or wasn't cast earlier. When was the last time that you saw either Octopussy or A View to a Kill?
Oh, it was a long time ago. Like when
yeah.
I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Those movies are, Octopussy is pretty great. Except for Roger Moore. And then A View to a Kill is real bad. And a big part of that is because Roger Moore was 57 years old when he was playing the part. And I feel like guys, why did you not cast Timothy Dalton two or three movies early and really let him thrive in that role? And, you know, the behind-the-scenes story is that Cubby Broccoli loved Roger Moore just as a buddy and wasn't willing to let him go, even though Roger Moore was like, "Hey man, I'm super old."
wasn't Pierce Brosnan like really
yeah.
for it before Timothy Dalton ended up getting it? And didn't that kind of like, I don't know, wasn't Pierce Brosnan scorned sort of after that?
Exactly. Yeah. He was, I don't know where I'm pulling this from, but I feel like I heard somewhere that there was discussion of recasting around For Your Eyes Only and Octopussy somewhere in there, but they didn't. They kept Roger Moore, but I think both Timothy Dalton and Pierce Brosnan were up then. I think Timothy Dalton was, I think both of them were deemed too young, which would have been a much better, you know, direction to err in, I feel like. But then, yeah, definitely before Timothy Dalton got it, Pierce Brosnan was their number one pick. But then his Remington Steele contract got renewed at the last second, and that was a big, I think it kind of, Brosnan in general seems to have a real tragic view of his time as James Bond, because he feels like, I don't know, it seems like he got it later than he wanted to, and then he lost it earlier than he wanted to. And while he had it, he didn't get the best material.
Well, what he should feel good about, though, is with his first outing as James Bond, he just absolutely nailed it and made one of the best James Bond movies, and really, to me, one of the best action movies of the 90s in general with GoldenEye, and the franchise found one of its best directors, too, in Martin Campbell. And, yeah, so, okay, you know, Tomorrow Never Dies is not a bad movie and is pretty fun and has one of the, some of the best action sequences of James Bond's history. But, yeah, World Is Not Enough is wonky, and Die Another Day is Die Another Day. So, no, he didn't get the best material overall, you know, for you know, his career, for the length of his career as James Bond. But who did, you know? Like, I mean, nobody.
Right.
He makes four movies, right? And the ones I just mentioned. Daniel Craig has made four movies now, and people feel a certain way about his movies, too. He hasn't knocked it out of the park every time, although I'm sure some people would disagree. But, you know, I mean, you're not a fan of Diamonds Are Forever. I mean, obviously there's the Never Say Never Again debacle, and, you know, A View to a Kill and Octopussy or titles, and Man with Golden Gun, even, in the eyes of some fans, are lesser, Moonraker, I guess, would be the more obvious one, are lesser Roger Moore efforts as James Bond, and a lot of people consider Timothy Dalton's run to be sort of like the dark period for the entire franchise, so it hasn't been, you know, home runs every single time, right? So Pierce Brosnan, I think the fact that he made one of the best Bond movies generally, he should feel great about that. And he'll always be remembered, I think, as one of the better Bonds for that specific reason, because of GoldenEye. And, you know, what's so crazy about GoldenEye, and you and I and our generation specifically relate to this, is the video game that came out of that. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't know what kind of credit should go to Pierce Brosnan, but he happened to be James Bond when that happened, and that was just such a game changer in that medium that GoldenEye will forever be remembered as an iconic James Bond movie for a variety of different reasons. So I have nothing but positive memories of Pierce Brosnan, and like you said, he just kind of has every quality that you want in a James Bond on paper, and I think he did his best. And if he didn't get the best scripts or the best directors or best movies, then, oh well, you got GoldenEye, and a lot of people would call that their favorite James Bond movie.
Yeah, it's great. I love Tomorrow Never Dies, too. I think The World Is Not Enough has its moments, and Die Another Day is the worst. He has the distinction of working with the worst James Bond director, Lee Tamahori, and the best James Bond director, Martin Campbell, who gave us GoldenEye and Casino Royale. And I didn't think this until I said it, but that seems kind of like a controversial thing to say, to say that the director that did the best job was a guy that did some latter day Bonds. But I think that if you look at Martin Campbell's other movies and then you look at his Bond work, it's like this guy just turns it on. He has some sort of switch in his brain where he just knows exactly how to direct a James Bond movie. And you look at the location photography and the the action scenes, the emotional scenes, even in GoldenEye and Casino Royale, and it's just staggering. Especially Casino Royale, which is my number two favorite James Bond movie. It's great, man. Like, it is a great movie. You did actually bring up something interesting that I think that every James Bond, every actor that's played James Bond, has had one great movie at least. Even the guy that had one movie, which you mentioned earlier, that's my favorite James Bond. I think it's the On Her Majesty's Secret Service is the best movie. But it's each guy has gotten a chance to be in something great. Daniel Craig did it, you know, his first outing, and I think that Martin Campbell, the the action scenes in Casino Royale, I think, are just mind-blowing and are filmed with a precision and a steadiness that was, in 2006, just such a breath of fresh air. The geography is so good in every scene. He's just great. But it doesn't lose the romanticism. It doesn't lose the brutality. It doesn't lose the stakes of James Bond at all. Like you said, GoldenEye is one of the best action movies of the 90s. That tank chase is wonderful. And has so many, he allows for so many nice little Bond moments in his movies. Barton Campbell's probably my top Bond director. Lewis Gilbert, my number two. I don't know. Number three may be Terrence Young for kicking it off really well.
Yeah.
And then keeping it going, and From Russia with Love, which is top five Bond for me for sure. That's just such a wonderfully effective spy movie.
Guy Hamilton has to be on the list. He's got to be.
He's kind of at the lower end, man. I mean, I know he did Goldfinger, so he gave us some of the most iconic moments, but then he also gave us The Man with the Golden Gun and Live and Let Die.
You're using those against him as cred as a Bond director?
They're bottom half. Look, the stunts in those movies are fantastic, and I think that's what he clearly had the most fun with. Was kind of standing back and letting Bond, you know, ramp boats across boats and do like a moon buggy chase and all that stuff. And I think he does all that stuff really well. But otherwise, those movies are so flat and the choices are so baffling. Like,
I wouldn't call Live and Let Die flat.
It's pretty flat, man. Like, I just watched it and it's not a super dynamic movie. You just turn on the first 15 minutes of Live and Let Die, and then turn on the first 15 minutes of The Spy Who Loved Me, and you'll see two
different directors. Is it Live and Let Die where Roger Moore uses the watch to pull the zipper down on a dress?
Yeah, that's a nice touch.
That ain't flat, dog.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's like one beat in a movie that is all
location
like,
is so fun though in that movie. Like
it's a fun movie. It's one of the better.
I think you're being a little too hard on Live and Let Die.
I'll rescind that and I'll say Guy Hamilton directed Diamonds Are Forever and The Man with the Golden Gun, both of which are two real real bad ones. He just seems a little bit bored. Except for in Goldfinger. But then, you know, he's not the worst. I never said he was the worst. There's Lee Tamahori. As much as I love Roger Spottiswoode's Tomorrow Never Dies, I feel like he didn't really bring a whole lot to it that the second unit didn't, wasn't ready to pick up for him. Those action scenes are incredible. But I don't know if Roger Spottiswoode really did a whole lot to, I don't know if he brought his Turner and Hooch fire to that one. Michael Apted, who's, you know, like the head of the DGA and this respected director, there's just nothing too I remember whenever he was announced for The World Is Not Enough, and then I watched the movie, and even at the time when I was, I think, 15 or something like that, I was like, what are they doing? Like, what is the criteria to direct a James Bond movie? And it seemed like the number one criteria was don't be American. And that was it. Like, I don't know. And even like Mark Forster is not really, didn't really bring anything necessary to the table. He brought something. And that was the guy I had huge hopes for. He didn't have much of a script to work with.
That brings us to this question. Should a journeyman or woman be, like, should journeyman only direct Bond movies? Because you look at, obviously, the auteurs lately who have directed them. There have been two, right? In Mark Forster and Sam Mendes. And one of them kind of hit the nail on the head with Skyfall, right?
Yeah.
And redeemed what Mark Forster did with Quantum of Solace, and obviously with Quantum of Solace, like, I think most people would call that probably, like, bottom five Bond overall.
No, it's not. I don't think it's that bad. It's not an offensively bad movie.
Okay, people don't like it. Like,
yeah,
people,
I definitely agree, yeah. It's
people
bottom
consider
half.
It's lesser Bond.
Sure.
And it was just kind of a weird choice from the beginning to me. Like, I remember when they announced Mark Forster's directing a James Bond movie, I was like, what? But honestly, I was kind of the same way with Sam Mendes, too. Like, he's not exactly the first person you ever... Like, he's probably not one of the first 20 names you would have thought of to make a James Bond movie today, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah, he's got the British thing. Yeah, that was the one thing that made sense to me is, oh, okay, he's steeped in British culture and he's British and, you know, this probably hits close to home.
He made American Beauty, you know? Like, I don't know about you, but... Maybe Lester Burnham has more Bondish qualities than I can remember, but I just didn't make sense to me. But obviously, watching Skyfall, they knew what they were doing, and he's fantastic, and the movie's great. So I guess it just depends. But if for instance, for the next Bond movie, they hire another auteur in the vein, in the mold of Sam Mendes, will that worry you? Or, I mean, it'll depend on, obviously, on how you feel about Spectre, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly.
Would that worry you, or would you rather it be a journeyman type?
Well, I don't know. Sam Mendes has kind of changed my mind about it. Usually I would be in the journeyman category, because if you look at the other films of Lewis Gilbert, or, well, you know, Lewis Gilbert did Alfie, so there's an auteurist, you know, approach there, kind of. But if you look at Martin Campbell, or you look at Peter Hunt, or you look at John Glenn and the movies that they made, John Glenn, I think an underrated Bond director. But if you look at their other movies, there's a lot of Iron Eagles in those filmographies, movies like that, and they're the definition of journeyman directors. So I always felt like, well, yeah, you get a guy in there that knows what an action movie needs to look and feel like. And then you make sure that he can deal with actors and get, you know, A-plus production design on his end, on his side. Sam Mendes worried me because I'm not a huge fan of any of his movies. But I think I think the fact that he went home to make it, I think helps a lot. Most of his other movies are about America, you know, Road to Perdition, American Beauty, Revolutionary Road to Perdition, the sequel, they're all comments on American culture and kind of just like America's dumb movies, and irritatingly so. So I feel like this was a really nice, Skyfall ended up being a really nice, it seemed like a personal thing for him. And, you know, you kind of guess that he probably grew up watching these movies and he's got a personal connection to them. So I feel like James Bond is such a revered cinematic figure that any auteur worth his salt is going to bow to that rather than make it about himself. And I think even Mark Forster tried his best to make something that, you know, that served Bond and didn't serve himself, because I think if you look at Mark Forster's career, he's not necessarily that much of an auteur. He does seem kind of like a journeyman director. If you've got Stranger Than Fiction and Stay on your resume, that seems like a pretty eclectic taste. I think right now it depends on who the auteur is, but I would be open to them allowing somebody to do what Sam Mendes did and allowing to make something that's a little bit different. I will say that, talking about Spectre a little bit, if we don't get a gun barrel opening in Spectre, I'm walking out within like 30 seconds. Because It was so beautifully set up in Casino Royale. It was like the origin story for the gun barrel opening. And then it was at the end at Quantum of Solace for some reason. That made zero sense. And then it was kind of at the beginning of Skyfall, and it was so clever that I give it to them. But they're out of excuses, and they better do it.
Yeah. And that's been kind of an issue that I've had with the Craig run, right? And
yeah.
I've got no real problem with Craig, but it seems like they're, you know, we've had these conversations about Jurassic World before, right? Where the movie is just more of a commentary on the series and the original movie, and unless a movie in itself, whereas these movies, you know, they're movies, but they feel like they each of them, the objective is, this ain't your daddy's James Bond movie, right? And we're going to do it a little differently. And it kind of gets away from the tropes that we actually love about the series. And I think that, and you hinted at this before about how the conversation always turns into what next with James Bond. I think that moving forward, once say Craig leaves the series, whenever that is, if it's just one more movie or whatever, I think we might get back to fun James Bond. And not to say that Craig's movies haven't been fun. I mean, Skyfall and Casino Royale, they're blasts, you know? And
yeah.
They're really fun action movies. But I think we might get back to the wittier, sort of self-referential in ways, James Bond that has a quip and a laugh. And I think we might get back to, say, the more Roger Moore-ish James Bond the next time around. Because if there's one, I guess, consistent complaint that fans of James Bond may have about Craig's run is that it's so serious, and it's just like we talked about this about the songs, right, lately, like,
yeah,
Craig's songs, there's just nothing fun about those songs. That they're fine songs and they're fine James Bond songs, and I think the same can be said about most of these movies that he's made so far. They're good, and they're fine entries into the James Bond canon, but I don't think fun is the first word you think of when you think of Daniel Craig James Bond movies. Do you?
No, I think it when I think of Casino Royale, but it's more because of the style, because of the bullet shot into the opening of the Chris Cornell song that you're a huge fan of. I feel like there's stuff in Casino Royale and like little action beats and stuff that are super fun, and the color in that movie is off the charts. So yes, I feel like it's visually fun, but no, it's not The Spy Who Loved Me kind of.
Well, they went so far out of their way to emphasize how much of a brute James Bond is this time, right? He's just like, he's like a gun for hire. He's, you know, more physical than anything. His actions speak louder than his words. That was something that they just really wanted to emphasize, and they changed the character to suit that in such an extreme way, and to suit perhaps Craig's strength as an actor, and, you know, in terms of like the physicality that he brought to the role, that for me, they kind of changed James Bond and reinvented him in a way that I don't know long term was the right way to go, even if it meant making really fun action movies.
I mean, I think every actor has to reinvent James Bond for himself, and I think that's what you have to do. But I see what you're saying with the over-serious Daniel Craig, but I see that a lot more in Quantum of Solace and Skyfall than I do Casino Royale. Again, like, he has, at the end of the kind of violence opening fight scene in Casino Royale, the guy thinks that the guy that he's kind of there to kill says, you know, the second time will be much, and then he gets shot by James Bond, and you assume he was going to say much easier, and James Bond goes, considerably, which I think is a fantastic joke. It's a fantastic delivery by Daniel Craig, and I think it's a good summing up of I think what they're going for with Daniel Craig, which is you nailed it with the physicality of this guy that definitely puts his body out there first, and then you know, when he's standing in the wreckage of what he's done, kind of makes a quip about it. And I think that there is something about James Bond there that they just couldn't do before, because there's a scene in Casino Royale where, you know, where he gets smashed into the sink and he gets all beat up. If you did that with Roger Moore, he would disintegrate because he's made of bread crust. So I feel like they couldn't do that before with James Bond, because whatever, they never had the actor that was willing to be as physical as Daniel Craig is. But I do think that there's a measure of humor and a measure of fun that's retained in Casino Royale. I feel like Quantum of Solace definitely, I can't think of a single joke in that movie He is brooding the entire time. He he buries his friend in a dumpster. He saves somebody saves somebody from getting raped at some point. It is a pretty miserable James Bond movie in terms of humor. There's not a whole lot going on there. And then in Skyfall, I feel like they go for it a good bit with some of the back and forth with Moneypenny and Q. But in general, I feel like that movie is, again, I mean, the villain's plot is basically to die and kill an old woman as he does it. So there's a morbidity, and I mean, people describe the Adele song as kind of a funeral dirge. And I think that's accurate. I don't think that those are necessarily bad things, but I agree with you that, they're going for this kind of darker tone with these movies that I think we're about ready to, you know, pull up out of that, and kind of fly into some brighter skies.
Well, not even the dark thing. The fact that it feels like with every Craig movie, they find it necessary to reinvent James Bond in a different way, right? And so with Skyfall, which, again, I think is a great movie, a great James Bond movie especially, it's, you know, we're making this more personal. We're learning more about James Bond, the person, and his backstory. And James Bond backstory was just never something that anybody, A, knew, and B, really wanted, you know, before that. And I don't know that they do now, and I'm not sure if that's something that they're going to explore a little deeper with Spectre. As, you know, we've seen a couple of trailers, and I know very little about this movie, but they seem to have hinted at the fact that they're going to kind of stay on that track, right? And
yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm not sure, again, that that's something that I want in a James Bond movie. And you mentioned the darker elements. Is that what we, I mean, like, that's not really James Bond, is it? I mean, there are dark things about every, you know, all of the James Bond movies, but for the most part, they're just meant to be fun pieces of Hollywood entertainment, right? And
yeah.
that are perfect escapism for people to watch this, you know, guy in a suit, you know, jump from airplanes or, you know, ride motorcycles or, you know, shoot up bad guys or ski down, you know, Mount Everest all while wearing a suit and tie, right? I mean, it's just really fun stuff. And I can't say that the Craig movies, I think they have to some degree, but I can't say that they really captured or held on to the identity of what we knew about the character in the film series James Bond. I think they reinvented it in a lot of really interesting ways that are very attractive to the modern audience, and the box office certainly reflects that. But I personally would love to see them sort of drift back into more familiar James Bond territory when it just strictly from a character standpoint. And that's not to take anything away from those three movies that he's made so far, or two really.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in the past, James Bond, like, the darkness in a James Bond movie has been used well when it's a kind of a sparingly used accent to the good times. You know, like On Her Majesty's Secret Service ends with the darkest thing that happens in any James Bond movie, but the movie that comes before that is a lot of fun and opens with this like really fun like beach fights, and then he wears a kilt and has a funny voice for a while, and the plot is that they're using like allergy medicine to take over the world or some crap. It doesn't matter at all, but it's a fun movie. And then you get this punch in the stomach at the end. And I feel like that's an interesting direction to go, but it that doesn't mean that you need to make a movie full of punches in the stomach, because eventually it loses its effectiveness. Yeah. I mean, I think that Daniel Craig or somebody has described, Casino Royale, Quantum Solace, and Skyfall as a kind of as an origin trilogy, and that's why at the end of spoilers, at the end of Skyfall, you see him walk into M's office, and it's like The Office from from Russia with Love, I think, with the leather door and Moneypenny outside and all that stuff.
Right.
And it feels like, okay, we're back. There's this amazing podcast that I've been that I've listened to all the way through, and now I'm listening to it again, called James Bonding, on the Nerdist podcast network. And one of the things that they talk about is, usually the best James Bond movies aren't movies where he's going off and, you know, finding himself or going rogue or something like that. The best ones are ones where he ends an adventure at the beginning, and then he walks into M's office, wherever it is, and gets his assignment, and then goes and does his job. And I feel like that's I think we're lacking there. I think the last one, he gets killed at the beginning, and then he kind of has to come begrudgingly back to work. And then the one before that, he's on the run the whole time. And then the one before that, he's doing his job, but then eventually he retires. Even Die Another Day, he's captured, and then he kind of goes rogue, and the world is not enough. He's injured, and it's basically Skyfall.
Fair here, with the Craigwins, he's Jason Bourne. You know, he's the rogue agent, and there's more mystery to him than, like, that's what I'm not a big fan of, especially the fact that James Bond and the company and the property, they let, obviously, Jason Bourne influence how they did their business and how they wrote their character that was obviously an influence on something like Jason Bourne. I just think that there's been an identity crisis with James Bond the past several movies, and I think that they created one for him that they were comfortable with. And again, I mean, Skyfall made like $1 billion, didn't it? And the two before that combined, I think, made $1 billion. So it's connecting with the audience. I just don't know that it's doing it by using the Bond formula. And to the credit of the studios, maybe they just knew that the Bond that we knew doesn't really connect universally with people the way that he once did. And so the reinvention was necessary to keep the series afloat. But just as a fan of the material itself, I would say, just, you know, as somebody who is familiar with this property and does even like these last few movies and likes Craig's Bond, I think that I would rather see them go back to the well than progress with what they're working with currently. So, like, if they, you know, again, looking ahead, whoever the next Bond is, I hope that they revert back to what Bond was before Craig, instead of casting somebody who's like Craig and can carry on this version of Bond.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think last year there was a movie that came out called The Guest, and it has a guy named, forget his name, Dan something. He was on Downton Abbey, and he's British, and he's in great shape. And he looks just like Daniel Craig. And I saw a bunch of stuff about, like, well, here we go. Here's the next Bond. Like, this is the guy that needs to take over. And I feel like that is such a bad idea, to just basically do the same thing we've been doing. I do think that, it needs to swing the other way. Daniel Craig isn't anything like Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan isn't anything like Timothy Dalton. Timothy Dalton certainly isn't anything like Roger Moore. So I feel like that's a good pattern to go into. And, you know, I mean, you talk about the Bourne influence, and I certainly see it in Quantum of Solace, but I think Martin Campbell and Sam Mendes do a fantastic job of shooting action in a way that is a complete reversal of how Paul Greengrass shoots action. But I see what you're saying about, you know, the kind of, you know, spy on a run kind of thing. But you do have to remember that James Bond is always influenced by outside movies. From the get-go, it was a rip-off of North by Northwest, and then it became a rip-off of Blaxploitation with Live and Let Die, and Star Wars with Moonraker. So there's always been, and, you know, Lethal Weapon and Commando being influenced, and influences on License to Kill, which is just this 80s drug action movie.
I think we need another crack at space. I think James Bond as an astronaut deserves another shot, at least one.
Dear Lord. Well, now, yeah, I mean, we've got Interstellar and Gravity, so yeah, it can be like a serious James Bond in space movie. That'd be great. That'd be really great.
Directed by Lee Tamahori.
Or Duncan Jones, right? He's British and he made Moon. So there you go. So, I mean, are we going to do this? Or are we going to do the thing where we try to cast the next James Bond? Is that going to happen?
Okay.
Well, there's an obvious answer.
If you say Johnny Depp, there's stunners coming.
No, I was going to say Jeremy Renner.
No, he needs to be the new Felix Leiter. That's basically what he is in Mission Impossible. All right, go.
Joshua Jackson. there are very obvious answers, and the last time there was a super obvious answer, they decided not to go with that, right? And it obviously worked out for them. But I think that sometimes the obvious answer is the right answer, and I think the next guy that everybody's going to be looking at is probably Michael Fassbender, right? And he would be great. He would be fantastic. Whether or not he'd want to do that, I don't know, but he was Magneto for a few movies, and if he's going to put on that stupid helmet and cape, then something tells me he wouldn't mind playing James Bond. And, you know, this is a character that I think, obviously, you mentioned the director, a director like Sam Mendes, taking British pride, right, in you know, taking on the character and doing it the right way and making it personal. Maybe that's the case with somebody like Michael Fassbender or someone, you know, I think another name that people are going to throw out there, and maybe, maybe not, I think Tom Hiddleston is somebody people are going to consider, and I think he would be great. I think, and hear me out on this, maybe he'd be a better bad guy, but I think he would be a pretty phenomenal Bond too. I think Benedict Cumberbatch would be a great Bond. Now, these are like the most obvious possible names that I could come up with to be the next Bond. They're the hot British actor guy out there right now, but I think any of them would be great, and I think it would be doing the franchise perhaps a disservice to overthink it. But if people consider Daniel Craig overthinking it, then maybe that's the way to go. So I'd be comfortable with the obvious choices. Is there anybody else out there right now who's less obvious that you think would fit?
Well, Idris Elba comes up a lot, and I think that's a pretty great pick. I don't know. I think he's a little too old for it. I'm always inclined to cast younger for this kind of thing, just because you get the problem of...
Here we go.
Daniel Craig.
Get from Hugo.
Yes, Asa Butterfield, for sure. I mean, you hear people say, like, Daniel Radcliffe, and it's just like, come on. First of all, he's, like, 4 feet tall. and he's just... It's just the most famous British person should be James Bond. That's not how you cast James Bond. I mean, I agree with Fassbender. I think he's the obvious choice, but if you're asking for a lighter touch, I don't think the guy that starred in Shame is going to give you a psychological.
I think you bring Steve McQueen on board, too. Package deal.
Yeah, for a return to the Roger Moore era with Steve McQueen and Michael Fassbender. I don't know if that's what you're going to get. Now, I think Tom Hiddleston, you know, I think he could pull it off. His hairline is a little troubling for me, but, you know, Sean Connery managed to deal with that. But
yeah,
I do
and
think,
wigs.
Right, yeah, well, I think that's what you might be looking at eventually after movie two. But I think Tom Hiddleston, I think he could definitely pull off a more fun-loving Bond. I think also Tom Hardy has come up some, and he basically was Bond in Inception. I think he could go both ways, in terms of you could make him the pissed off bulldog Daniel Craig guy, or he could be, you know, the relaxed, cool guy. So I think Tom Hardy is enough of a chameleon that he could go either way. I don't, at this point, I could totally see Tom Hiddleston doing it. I don't think I see Fassbender and Hardy doing it. I think they're both at a point where they're gunning for Oscars and don't want to be typecast as anything anymore. But I think they would both be good. I used to be, Clive Owen was the guy that everybody was like, well, yeah, here you go. But I don't know if he could have done what they wanted to do with Craig. in terms of the physicality.
I don't know that it's fair to assume that he would be playing that Bond had they cast him, you know?
I think they had a pretty clear idea of what the story was.
Well, that's why they cast him, you know? Like,
right, yeah, that's what I think that they showed him, you know, some stunt guy doing the stuff that Daniel Craig did and then looked at him. He was like, I'll go be in Children of Men instead. I actually have a hard time casting anybody right now. And I think that's because they don't need to recast. I think they need to stick with Daniel Craig. Like, let this guy, whatever he's pissed off about, if he's pissed off about something, fix that and let him own this role. Because I went back and watched some of Munich in preparation for Bridge of Spies, and you see his performance there, and then you see his performance in Casino Royale and Skyfall, and it's just like, this guy has such screen presence and has such great potential as this character that I say keep him in the role and let the movie get goofy around him. You know, if you want to lighten it up, which hope Spectre does a little bit. It doesn't have to go all the way, but
don't look the opposite
don't do
of
it.
That.
I know. I mean the name of it is Spectre.
You've seen the trailer, right? The initial trailer.
I've seen the very first trailer.
Right. It don't look light.
It doesn't. But they've got him on the IMAX poster in Roger Moore's costume from Live and Let Die in front of the Baron Samedi skull head. So it's like,
right.
If y'all are really serious about throwing back like that, then maybe that's in the movie. Again, a little bit. Like, all I ask is lighter than Quantum of Solace and Skyfall. Like, can we not have a suicidal villain? I mean, again, Skyfall is basically a remake of The World Is Not Enough, and it was the same thing there, where it was just, it was trying so hard to be serious that it's like, you remember what you're dealing with here. And I feel like they could get there with Craig. And he's a little bit older, so maybe he wants to back off the physical stuff anyway. So, I don't know. If I have to answer the question, I'll say Fassbender. But I think if you cast Fassbender, you're just going to keep going down this. You might as well get Steve McQueen to direct it.
Well, what's interesting, what you said there about, like, whether or not Craig wants to play the lighter Bond versus what we've had the past few movies, and what I'm guessing we have with Spectre. Have you seen these Heineken commercials with?
No.
So there are these Heineken commercials where it's Daniel Craig as James Bond, and they're just like super brightly lit, and it's like him running away from, like, you know, faceless bad guys, and he's like jumping on a speedboat where a beautiful, you know, woman is, and he's just like taking off and going on a chase. And it's just like old school, like 1960s, 70s Bond. And Daniel Craig looks like he looks so miserable in the commercials that it's like they're trying to get him to play the Bond that he just isn't, you know? But it's also kind of like a weird tease to what his Bond could be, you know, in a way, if he embraced it. And I'm guessing it's less about not wanting to play. It's less about, you know, which Bond he wants to play versus, oh, I've got to do this dumb commercial, you know? You know, as for why, like, his affect is the way it is. But, yeah, I don't think we're going to get that from him. I think they're going to have to recast if they're going to want to change, shift in tone. Because, you know, look at the man's body of work, you know, 10-10 notwithstanding, in Dreamhouse, for that matter.
Right.
He's actually a lot of fun in 10-10. You know, he actually chews scenery in that movie,
yeah.
Which is not something Daniel Craig is billed to do, you know? And,
well, you look at Cowboys and Aliens, and that's clearly a movie designed to be tongue-in-cheek, and then they recast him, you know, instead of Robert Downey Jr., and the whole tone of the movie had to change, because presumably, if you give Daniel Craig Robert Downey Jr. lines to deliver, that's not going to work out very well.
Yeah, let's recast, and let's get the exact opposite of Robert Downey Jr. You know,
yeah.
And not to take anything away from Daniel Craig, it's just not what he does. You
sure,
know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you couldn't have put Roger Moore in Skyfall. You know, that would have been hilarious to ask this guy to pull off this kind of, you know, existential crises. So yeah, I mean, every actor has their type, and that's totally fine. And But, you know, I don't know. I'm interested to see this commercial now because that kind of sounds fun. And, you know, have you ever, like, run away from bad guys and jumped in a boat after having a Heineken? I mean, you wouldn't look, you would not look like you're having a great time. That would not.
What about Bond bad guys? Are there any actors or actresses out there that would make a great villain?
You know, Christoph Waltz is such an on-the-nose choice for the Bond bad guy. I'm not going to say who he might
be.
You
already got hate for it?
No. Hey, it just seems like, well, yeah, of course. That's the obvious choice. I actually really liked the guy in Quantum of Solace. I feel like that was an underserved role, but I feel like that was a really good, slimy casting decision there.
Yeah, another Munich alum.
Yeah, there you go. Well, and Munich also has Michael Lonsdale in it, who played Hugo Drax in Moonraker. So that movie,
oh my God,
shocked. So what I'm saying is Eric Bana as the next James Bond villain.
Might have been a good Bond.
Actually, Ciaran Hines, or however you say his name, he would make a decent Blofeld if you put him in like the gray, you know, suit. I feel like he could be good. Ben Mendelsohn would be pretty fantastic. I don't know. It's not something I give a lot of thought to. You talk about actors that were almost Bond, and they kind of did that in the 90s where it was like, well, Sean Bean could have been Bond maybe, so let's make him the bad guy. Or the dude from the Full Monty, he could have maybe been Bond. So.
No, I don't think he could have.
I think he was on the list. I think I remember in the 90s.
No,
I kept
freaking
up with,
way,
no,
dude.
I think that he may have, Robert Carlyle. I think he may have been on
Begbie.
The list. Dude, I remember reading in a newspaper that they released, like, their wish list before Pierce Brosnan was cast, and Hugh Grant was on the list.
Was it The Onion, Stark?
Yeah, it was The Onion in 1994. I had a subscription. No, this was like, it was, like, in, like, the entertainment section of the newspaper, and which was, you know, Associated Press or something. It wasn't, like, the local entertainment beat writer in Huntsville, Alabama. It was sourced from somewhere seemingly legitimate, and Hugh Grant was on the list.
Hey.
And I went to my mom, and I, like, read her the list, and my parents didn't care. But she was like, oh, Hugh Grant. Like, he'd be a good Bond. And I was like, yeah, of course you'd say that. Mom.
She must have loved Extreme Measures.
Oh, yeah. Top five for her. I think Sam Neill was maybe in the running in that early Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan.
Just please find this article. Like, seriously. Find this.
Sources. I have sources.
Yeah, sure.
The Sam Neill.
Mr. Bean on the list?
Well, he wouldn't be on the list because he played Q in Never Say Never Again, so I'm sure he's blacklisted from.
Well, and yeah, and then, I mean, he kind of pulled the, you know, if I'm not going to be Bond, I'm just going to make Johnny English.
Written by the writers of several of the Pierce Brosnan movies.
Good Lord.
Yeah, there's some trivia for you. The Sam Neill was I'm pretty sure that was a real thing in the 80s. So I think there's actually a screen test of Sam Neill for maybe The Living Daylights or something like that. Which even if that had happened in 95 with Goldeneye, I would have been totally on board with. I think he was probably my number one pick at that point. So we're getting pretty far into the weeds and some dangerous psychology for me. So anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
Well, my last question is, like, how pumped are you for Spectre? And I don't mean that in, like, a funny way, like, how pumped are you? Because I know we're both really excited about it, but have you gotten a sense? I know you've been staying away from the marketing and from everything related to it in general, but have you gotten any sort of sense or had your finger on the pulse in terms of what people's level of expectation or anticipation is for Spectre and how they feel about James Bond in general right now? Do you think people still love James Bond even after Skyfall was as successful as it was?
No, I kind of feel like they don't. I don't know if it's Star Wars coming up or if it's, you know, we're four movies in with this guy, so the honeymoon is over. But I do feel like there's a general malaise with this, and it may be the tone of the movies, or I'm not sure what it is. I'm super excited for it. I've liked and then loved. I've liked all the Daniel Craigs, and I've loved one of them. And I feel like, you know, maybe they've gotten something out of their system with these other two. And Skyfall is again, it's not a movie that I can't say that I love it, but it is really great. It's a fantastic movie. So there's I have all the reason to be very excited, and I am, but I am kind of brought down by the general mood. It does seem like people are kind of wanting to be done with it, or I don't know, maybe it seems like people aren't really excited for it, don't think it's going to be good. Maybe it's, you know, I've heard things about the length, or there's the Sam Mendes almost didn't do it, so there's the feeling that maybe he shouldn't have done it if he didn't really want to do it, you know?
Well,
and there's the Daniel Craig news, I think, kind of brings me down, because it's like, well, if this movie drove you to not want to do this job anymore, then how good of a job were you doing? So I'm concerned about the overall feeling going into it, but I'm still very excited, and I can't wait to see it.
Well, the studio reportedly spent $300 million on it. Like that.
Good Lord.
Yeah, just an astronomical number. So they must feel good. And, I mean, it's already breaking box office records in Europe right now. It's gotten an early release overseas, and it's doing extremely well. And Skyfall would suggest that people still love James Bond. So there's obviously still a lot of studio confidence globally that it will do extremely well. I just don't hear anybody talking about Spectre right now.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's got to be Star Wars. I think it's either Star Wars or just a weird timing thing. But yeah, maybe the malaise I'm getting is just from critical circles, you know.
So does Craig rank dead last for you as Bond?
No. I don't know, man. Like there's moments where he's pretty high up there.
Well, who's last? Is he last?
There's no last, man. They're all good. I think
one of them's last. Who is it?
It's got to be Brosnan or Moore at this
you
point.
You hate Brosnan and Moore.
Yeah, yeah. They're the worst. No, there's just they're soft.
Ooh.
Like SAWFT. You know, they're just kind of.
You're not scared of him.
I'm not scared of him. That's a really good way to put it. And I think Moore is a pretty tall dude. And I mean, Brosnan is you know, I feel like Brosnan looks the part in a suit, but then, you know, you put him in a short sleeve shirt and you're like, oh, hey, Dad.
But you want your Bond to be like Jack Hulk ripped in the
right,
arm.
Right. You know the wrestler Ryback? I feel like he'd make a great James Bond.
Forget Fassbender.
Yeah. Put Ryback in a wig. No, there's a danger. Like I said, Timothy Dalton has that look where it's like, if that dude walks in a room and looks at you, you're going to be like, oh, shit, I'm not going to mess with you. Like, he's not huge, but, you know, he means business. But then he also has the ability to kind of, like, loosen up and relax and smoke a cigarette.
Yeah, that was the issue my dad, who's a Batman fan, you know, growing up, had with Michael Keaton. He was just like, guy, he's got skinny arms. He can't be Batman.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. It's a really good point. And that's something that I think has to give Craig a lot of points, is that, like, you can, when he bends his arm, you can tell that he has an elbow. And which, but, like, Roger Moore is like a macaroni noodle. It's just, like, just soft, man.
So
does he even lift?
So you want Jai Courtney to be the next James Bond?
Yeah, I think that's where we've gotten to. I mean, he's Australian, right? So he's got some sort of accent. Yeah. I mean, is Logan Lerman? Do you think he could muster a British thing?
I think we're good.
Yeah, we're done.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com. and AspectRadioShow.com.
Film Nerds Unlimited will return in Spectre hype review or something, spoiler review for Spectre or something like that.
How about the 10 podcasts are not enough?
Damn. Oh, that's killer. Film Nerds Unlimited will return with a review of Attack of the Clones.